part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm gonna do it part. I'm gonna do it part-time. I'm gonna do it part.
Fanboy.com. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, dude. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Fabulous.
That's good to hear. Always good to hear.
Always nice to be fabulous.
Fabulous. Fabulous. Kind of like what we're going to talk about this week.
Absolutely.
Yes. 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 So this is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am Christian Horn, and I'm here with my pal Paul Edwards.
Hello.
And we are here to chat about Ant-Man.
Yay, Ant-Man.
Ant-Man, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, Ant-Man, da-da-da-da, Ant-Man.
Ant-Man, which was so much fun, wasn't it?
It was. It was the latest Marvel Studios release. Not without its flaws, I will say, but, you know, all in all, I had a really good time. I had a pretty good time. And my wife did, too. My wife seemed to, I think, enjoy it even more than I did. So
okay, there
you go.
Well, let's get started in on Ant-Man.
Absolutely.
You know, in the comics, Ant-Man is one of the first of the Avengers.
That's right.
Like he's Hank Pym, super scientist, as they all are, you know, in the
Marvel universe
there. But in the movies, it's a little different. You know, the Hank Pym, you know, sort of that would have been the Avengers, sort of had his heyday, I guess, in like the 60s and 70s in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You know, we sort of find out about him.
Kind of like a James Bond.
Yeah. We find out about him sort of at the end of his superheroing career as the movie starts off. And then we're introduced to our brand new Ant-Man, who is Scott Lang, played by Paul Rudd.
Yes.
And wow, like, I gotta say, they've really got like sort of their origin story thing down like pat. Like the origin part of this thing like flew by, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was really good. I just feel like these Marvel movies were starting to settle into a formula, you know what I mean?
And yeah.
I felt like as fun as this was, as amazing as Paul Rudd was, as fantastic as the effects are, you know, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, I kind of seen some of this before. You know what I mean? There's not much new here to get me, like, besides, you know, the effects of like shrinking and stuff like that. There's not much new in the story to like really shake me up.
This is really like sort of a creatively perilous time, I guess, for Marvel to, you know, because, you know, people are sort of getting hip to the, you know, the formulas. Like literally, like somebody described, I saw something on Facebook this week where it's like, okay, in Iron Man, he's up against his bald villain who is a coworker who is trying to steal his technology. Oh, and by the way, tries to kill him too.
Yeah.
And like literally Ant-Man, like if you're putting in that sort of a plot, I mean, it's the same thing.
It's very similar to Iron Man, I felt.
Right. What's great is that it's super duper lighthearted, you know, like it moves breezily along. Like it sort of is aware of the fact that you're aware of the formula. And, you know, so they don't spend a lot of time, you know, bogging you down with pesky things like motivations and, you know, you know, like necessarily any sort of like deep history. It's like, okay, you know, here's your hero. You know, He was in jail, but he was a Robin Hood guy, and he loves his daughter. That's all you need to know about.
Yeah. It's very much like moving along. Mm-hmm. We're walking. Mm-hmm. We're going.
He gets small. Let's face it. The real star of this movie, honestly, were those set pieces where he was shrinking.
Absolutely.
Those were some really, really cool set pieces. It's done in a way that definitely reminds you of the comics, you know, like some of those framing shots of them, like in the ant tunnels and everything. I mean, like, those are right from the comic books.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I really felt I feel like such a negative Nelly sometimes, because it was impressive, but there's a part of me that's like, if there hadn't been like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, I probably would have been more impressed with this. You know what I mean? More impressed with like the shrinking thing. You know what I mean? Like, there's a part of me that's like, again, like, I feel like there's so much in this movie. I feel like I've seen it before. It's a little warmed over. You know what I mean? It's fun. I really enjoyed it. I mean, we had a lot of fun watching it, mm-hmm. but it didn't give me like the whiz bang that, you know, like the first Iron Man did, or the first Avengers movie, or the Winter Soldier did.
Jaded bastard.
I am a jaded bastard. I don't know what's going on, because quite honestly, like, there's a part of me that's like I feel Peyton Reed did such a good job with this, and I mm-hmm. really liked it, but at the same time, again, it's my problem with a lot of the Marvel movies, where it's like the flow of the story gets interrupted by it having to match with the other movies, and there's a part of me that's like, damn, I really wish I could have seen Edgar Wright's take on this, because I just feel like he probably would have taken that formula and like cracked it in half and come up with something, you know.
Yeah,
just a lot, maybe not that much different, but very interesting, where I think, you know, I would have been coming out of the theater like giddy, like, ah, like, that was so great. And with this movie, I came out and I was like, that was fun, but, you know, I wasn't astounded.
Yeah,
it wasn't my tale to astonish, shall we say. You know what I mean?
Well, as I said, this is definitely like a transitional movie for Marvel in a lot of ways, because in a way, this sort of, I think, sums up all the formula things that have come before it.
Yeah.
And it's starting to set up, I think, you know, some of the big themes that you're going to see in the Marvel movies coming forward. Because we all know Doctor Strange is coming out. So one of the things you saw in Ant-Man is sort of the, you know, the mentor and student relationship gone wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Hank Pym with, you know, Yellow Jacket in this, you know.
Yeah.
Hank Pym was his mentor. Things went wrong, you know. I think they're setting up sort of some of the newer formulas that you're going to start to see in the next Marvel movies. You know, it'll be really, really interesting to see, like, if they sort of jump away, you know, from the traditional formula, as they kind of started to do with this. I mean, this one, I'd say, was more of a heist movie than, you know, any of the other things. It didn't have necessarily, in fact, like, the ending wasn't like a giant ending, you know. They weren't fighting aliens or anything like that. It was very much just a, you know, stop the bad guy.
Well, yeah, and that's why it reminds me a lot of Iron Man. You know, Iron Man,
right,
you know, played it very close to the vest, had a very classic storyline, had a very, you know, really good actor, good lead actor, charming, funny, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, and the thing is like, now that we're talking it through, I really don't feel like this is as much a weakness of the Marvel movies themselves as it is of the comic books, because, you know, the more you think about it, the more you see, like, so many of these origins are so much alike. I mean, even though this Ant-Man movie kind of really, from the comics, went in its own direction. I mean, I think, like, when we were talking about Age of Ultron, mm-hmm. we were like, okay, now they're just, like, they're doing their own thing. They're remaining somewhat faithful to the comic books, but they're mm-hmm. not, you know, being slavish to it. And I saw a lot of that in this movie, and I actually really appreciated it because, you know, Hank Pym's history is so freaking convoluted in the comics, you know what I mean? That I don't think there's any way you could dive into that without making people's heads explode.
I agree, you know, which is, I thought, a good approach to how they handled him. It's like, okay, look, here's what you need to know. He used to be a superhero, you know, he's got this, and, you know, he's got this technology. That's going to gear this next movie. You know, like, this is what it did a really good job of sort of bringing non Ant-Man fans up to speed with what Ant-Man is all about.
Yeah.
And, you know, sort of like talking about how it's a lot like Iron Man. Well, damn, hasn't Ant-Man always been a little bit of a second rate Iron Man in a way?
Yeah. Or a Mr. Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and it's kind of interesting because you've got like Hank Pym who, I mean, he's always sort of felt like, you know, the runner up to everybody else.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the bits that I love in this movie when he, you know, when we haven't even really talked about the story yet, but when Hank Pym is training him how to use the suit or showing him how to use mm-hmm. the suit, and he's like, this is not some Iron Man thing. This is not Stark technology. This is not some little suit. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, that's great. You know, I love how he's like very much like there's this enmity between him and the Stark family, you know, that they're playing up, which is just like really cool. Yeah.
Michael Douglas, I thought, like, brought a really fantastic, you know, effortlessly, you know, smart, you know, suave performance, you know, perfect casting there.
Yeah.
You know, they've gotten super lucky with their casting.
Oh my God. But don't you feel like and that's another thing with this movie is like, I'm watching this movie, I'm enjoying this movie, but there's a part of me that knows that there is a secret agent Ant-Man, like, adventures in this universe, and I want to see those adventures. I want to see him with the Wasp, you know what I'm saying?
Right,
like
right.
fighting communists or whatever, you know what I mean? Maybe like aged Nazi scientists, you know? like a Mission Impossible, but with like guy in Ant-Man armor.
They
like,
know that somebody's going to draw the comic book of that.
Yeah, you know? I know, right?
Like,
exactly.
That's kind
or
of the fun
show.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of the fun thing is like, you know, Marvel sort of is in a place now where if they wanted to, you know, they're doing television, they're doing movies, and if they want to start basing some of their, you know, new comic properties off of the cinematic universe, then like that's kind of a cool thing for them, you know, then they don't have to retrofit everything, you know, they don't have to have a huge event or anything like that. They can just say, hey, it's tied in with the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk a little bit about the story itself.
Yeah, let's do
the movie.
You open up with that introduction. He's basically quitting SHIELD. He's walking out of SHIELD because he thinks that, you know, if his technology is leaked out, it's going to be too dangerous for mankind.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And there's, you know, that little sort of, again, you know, exchange of like, you can't, this technology, you can't let it fall into the wrong hands. Like, what mm-hmm. are you doing? And, you know, there's a guy, John Slattery from, you know, Mad Men, you know, kind of like just doing the John Slattery Mad Men thing. You know,
Howard Stark. Right?
Yeah. And Haley Atwell is in it, and it's just interesting because it's really funny because you're looking at the age makeup that Haley Atwell has, and then like when Michael Douglas walks into that scene, it's very shocking. I was like shocked.
Yeah,
I was like, oh my God, they did a really good job de-aging him. Like, I was like, holy cow.
The digital makeup in this movie is amazing.
Yeah,
because they're even the other dude. Who they did the de-aging process on, you know, the guy from the Hal Hartley films.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, it's smooth, man. Like it's weird, like watching a young Michael Douglas in a new scene.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It is really weird, and it's just like, but at the same time, it was like I was watching him. I was like, oh, like I remember why I liked you so much. Not that he's a bad actor now, but it just took me back to like, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know,
I mean, you. It's really cool that like he doesn't spend his time coasting on your goodwill toward everything that he's done before. You know, he's in this movie, you know, and he brings all of that awesome Michael Douglasness to this part, which was really cool to see.
Yeah. He's really good at doing the sort of parental like figure thing, like in this movie, like he's mm-hmm. really good at sort of being the Obi-Wan to like, you know, Scott Lang's Ant-Man, you know, but anyway, he gets introduced and then it's like cut to Paul Rudd. He's getting out of Scott Lang.
Getting out of jail. And, you know, you meet his little sort of burglary crew and everything, you know, who are complete comic relief. And the guys seem like they're having like a great time. Yeah. Just a tad racist.
that's the thing. You know what I was thinking? Like, you know, I'm not like really, I don't get... I'm not against it, but like when they cast like different actors, like when they cast in, they put like, okay, let's just say it, like the Human Torch is black in the Fantastic Four movie, like that mm-hmm. kind of thing drives me a little crazy sometimes, like when the character is established as a certain race. But there was a part of me that's like, why couldn't Ant-Man have been Latino? Like there's a part of me that's like, why
is he
Scott
the only
Lang-
white dude in with like all of these, you know,
clownish
guys from the...
Yeah.
Oh my God. But you know what, one of the things that was nice to see though is, of course, you know, since they're the good guys, you know, the idea, like, that's one of the fun things with the Marvel Universe is that you've got a whole bunch of like guys who are former bad guys, you know, but now they're good guys.
Yeah.
And it's fun seeing. I think that's probably going to be another Marvel sort of trope coming down the line too, is more people who are on the wrong side who are now on the right side
kind of
stuff.
Yeah. I mean, let's just say that Michael Peña, he's fantastic in this movie.
Oh yeah, yeah. Again, like his sense of comic timing is phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is they all work really well off of each other. But at the same time, there were times where I felt like the jokes were not hitting as solidly as they could have.
Right.
And I found myself laughing a lot when Michael Peña was on the screen and when Paul Rudd was, you know, kind of doing his shtick, you know, his little wise-ass shtick, you know. And that was really... So he gets introduced to his little clique. You find out that he wants to go straight, which, you know, again, this is the, you know, this is the ex-con movie formula, you know,
I'm gonna
go straight and
he's gonna go straight, but nothing's working for him. Man, Baskin Robbins just keeps after him.
Baskin Robbins always knows, or whatever it is that they say.
Which is like really funny, because like Baskin Robbins is like sort of a, I guess they're a corporate sponsor here.
Are they?
You know?
Yeah, like, I mean, I would imagine that somebody had to pay something. Yeah.
But man, they're like, you know, you look at them and it's just like, wow, no way would I want to work for that.
Yeah, I know. But it is a brilliant scene, especially when he gets called in and whoever the guy is that played his boss, Baskin Robbins, that guy was fantastic, because I was like, oh wow. It reminded me a little bit of something like out of The Office or something like that. Or oh my gosh, what's the movie with Jennifer Aniston and
the Office Space,
like something out of that, like. And I was like, oh, this is very it's really interesting, because like the whole movie is sort of like a big puzzle of like different pieces, and mm-hmm. and for me they fit together well, but not like sort of perfectly. There's something about the flow of the whole thing that just, you know. But you know, again, it's really funny, because I realize with a lot of these Marvel movies, especially when they're starting off with a new character, the mm-hmm. beginnings of the movies, I'm always kind of like, and then as it goes on, like it gets better and better. Like something about the Marvel movies for me just totally go against that screenwriting rule, where mm-hmm. like if you lose them in the first like 10-15 minutes, then they're gone. Like you're never going to get them back. Like Marvel, I wouldn't say they lose me in the first 10, 15 minutes, but they definitely have me like really sitting tall in my skepticism seat. And then as it goes on, they manage to break me down, you know?
So yeah, it's part of their formula, man.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the formula must be working because I really, you know, like I said, I mean, I enjoyed it. There's just, you know, there's a part of me that likes to nitpick and I can be a nitpicker, you know what I mean?
That makes you a comic book fan.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, it just makes me a fanboy.
Yeah, so anyway, Scott Lang wants to go straight, but he can't, you know, ends up stealing the Ant-Man suit.
Yes, by accident. Well, by accident.
Not by accident,
though. He's thinking it's money.
As we find out, which through a really, really well-staged bunch of sequences.
Yeah.
Like the way that they handle exposition in this movie was so good because they put it in Michael Pena's hands.
Because
he's there to be exposition.
Yeah.
But the way he does it is so entertaining, and the way it's shot like moves it along just great.
Yeah. And those scenes remind you of another? There's definitely another heist movie that's done something like that.
Yeah, that's definitely Peyton Reed's like sort of homage moment.
Yeah.
You know, it's like sort of 50s and 60s, you know, smooth spy movies and things like that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Which I enjoyed.
Yeah, I really did too. And, you know, it's really cool when you get a movie that like doesn't mind being a movie, you know?
Yeah.
And like, this is definitely like, when you look at this thing, it's like, yeah, this is a movie. We're not trying to make you believe it's real in any way.
No,
you know?
No,
like
no,
it's
yeah.
just a fantastic movie. And it's, you know, when it goes into full on like heist mode and like when it sort of goes to those like movie genres, not really the comic book genre stuff, like that's where this movie like really flies for me.
When the thing is firing on all cylinders, you're all in. Like, and can I just say, like, since we've gotten to the part where he steals the Ant-Man suit, how much I love the Ant-Man suit. Like, I love the design of the Ant-Man suit. Like, for me, and I think I posted this on Facebook a while ago, that it really reminds me of that old Mantis TV show. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that. It was on Fox and Carl Lumley, right? I think that's the actor's name. It's that and Ultraman. There's like this giant, like great influence running through that suit, you know what I'm saying? Where they didn't kind of feel like they had to stick with the original design so much, you know, other than the color scheme. But like, I love that suit. I love that helmet. Like, that helmet is up there like with the Rocketeer for me, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where it's like, I want a replica of that Ant-Man helmet, and you know someone's gonna make it, and it's gonna be completely overpriced.
Yeah, of course. What's great about it is that it looks like a suit that came from like the 60s or 70s. Like, you know, because the original character would have been active during that time, this looks like it's from that era, and it's designed to look like it's from that era.
Yeah,
which, you know, like it's got a fantastic look to it. It's like, it's got buttons and dials and, you know, but it's still like sort of armored, you know. It's almost like a space suit meets a suit of armor.
Yeah. It really does look like an old sci-fi I'm looking at it right now on my screen, and it does look like an old sci-fi space suit, like what they imagined people would dress up in space like before we actually got there, you know what I mean? Like sleek but not too tight, you know what I mean? And like the helmet covers everything. Yeah, good call.
And you're totally right about the Ultraman influence.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
It definitely looks like a Japanese costume hero.
That's what I love about it. Like, I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, oh my god, that's totally Ultraman, like, you know. Mm-hmm. And I love the buttons, where the buttons are, you know. Mm-hmm. What I mean, that reminded me again of the Rocketeer, like how he's like clicking, and you know, so there's a lot of like really great design influences,
and they weren't afraid to keep their hero in the suit for long periods
of time. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Paul Rudd, like he spends a good time of this movie with his face in the helmet. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it's really good. Really good stuff. So he steals the suit, and basically he ends up going back to jail. He steals the suit, and then
he's arrested, but he's sprung.
He goes to put it back.
Yeah, right? he's arrested.
Yeah.
He's arrested when he goes to return it. Change of heart, goes to bring it back.
Turns out he puts it on and it freaks him out. He gets shrunk for the first time in the bathtub, and he's like, "I'm taking this back." And he's contacted
also by Hank Pym while he's in the suit.
Yes, that's right.
You realize that Pym has been sort of, pushing the buttons the whole time.
Exactly.
He's brought in to steal things for Hank Pym. I mean, and Hank Pym, it has been, affected by too much time, too many bad things that have happened to him. He can't wear the suit anymore.
Yeah. He basically says that it took a toll on him. But what I insinuated from that was that physically he couldn't do it anymore. Like, there's definitely some talk, especially towards the beginning of the movie when they kind of like mention the Wasp. And for anyone who doesn't know, the Wasp is sort of like Ant-Man's partner in the comics, his wife, and Janet Van Dyne in the comics. They insinuate in the beginning of the movie that his wife may have had some problems with the suit, like it may have affected her in some way.
That's the other thing, is that clearly, it's this technology, that he has to, shrink things and work with the quantum realm. It's uncontrollable in a way. He does have the suit that sort of controls it, but you sort of find out his whole past through the movie. What's brought him to this point is the fact that he's lost his wife. He's, again, and in another Marvel trope, by trying to protect someone, you push them away, that's his daughter, Evangeline Lilly. Hope, is that the character?
Yes, Hope.
Yeah.
Hope, I think her last name is actually Van Dyne.
I think it's Van Dyne, yeah.
So
he has brought himself to a point where he can't use the suit, probably physically, but also emotionally. He's clearly, a dude who's lost a lot.
Yeah.
And he needs Scott Lang to sort of be his, eyes and ears and ant hand.
Yeah.
Or ant handler, I guess.
Exactly. Because he's a master thief, and there's a lot of reasons that he chooses him, but I really like the sort of thing where it's like, I think they kind of, I don't know if they outwardly say, but sort of like that he's not violent, like he's not, mm-hmm. he's not reckless that way, what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, it was very interesting because, they introduce Hope Van Dyne, who I guess, I did a little research. It's interesting because in the Spider-Girl comics in Marvel, mm-hmm. where they take place in the future, there is the daughter of, I guess, Ant-Man and the Wasp, and her name is Hope Van Dyne. But I think in that universe, she's a villain.
Okay.
It's interesting how in this movie, they really took, they overtly took elements from, every part of the Marvel comic universe. You know what I mean? They didn't just stick with just one sort of, reality or one sort of line of comics. They were like, let's take a little from here, let's take a little from here. But I really, because they introduce Hope Van Dyne, who is, Hank Pym's daughter, and I'm looking at her and she's like in perfect shape, and she wants to put on the suit, and he won't let her put on the suit. He's like, no, I won't let you put on the suit, and he's trying to protect her. And there's a little bit of that goes on in the beginning of the movie towards the middle of the movie, and she's like, why are we hiring this clown, or like, why are we bringing this guy to break in? He's reckless, he's mm-hmm. he's a burglar. And then they have that dialogue in the car where Scott Lang, Paul Rudd, basically says, like, you don't get it, like, I'm expendable. Like, he doesn't want to send you in, not because he doesn't trust you, because he doesn't want you to get hurt. Like, he doesn't care about me, mm-hmm. I mean? And I thought that was a really good moment, because that came at the right time in the movie, because at that time in the movie, I was kind of thinking to myself, like, hey, man, like, why don't you just give her the suit, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think too, like, what's great about Paul Rudd is, like, you know, he's like accepting of, like, he's like, it's like, oh yeah, I'm expendable. Like, he's a dude who, you know, is sort of used to being expendable.
Yeah.
In a way. And I think he has a, he does, you know, for somebody who pretty much, like, could have been, like, just sort of a carbon copy of, like, a superhero, you know what I mean? Because they were doing so much shorthand. He really does a fantastic job selling, you know, selling his character beyond just the, you know, those broad strokes that are given.
Yeah. It's, you know, and it's very interesting in this movie too, that the origin does not really have to do with somebody dying or somebody like, you know, like, he ends up kind of doing it because it's sort of like, again, well, it's fun. It seems like he's like really embraces, like, oh wow, this is cool. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting too. Like, I mean, it's not, he is one of those sort of guys, he's not doing it to change. Like, he doesn't really, that's one of the things that's interesting. He doesn't change through the movie. You know, it's not like your usual hero's journey thing. He's pretty much the same guy at the end as he is in the beginning, you know.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because there's so many movies where it's like the guy really is like a fuck up, you know.
Right.
And then by the end of the movie, he, you know, and it's like, I want to be with my kid and I want to prove that I'm right. Like, we've seen that again in like crime movies again and again. And in this movie, he kind of like, he redeems himself like through his actions, but it wasn't like, it's not like he had a personality change or saw the world in a different way.
No, he was a good guy from the beginning who just basically made a bunch of bad choices. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And at the end of the story, you know, he's still pretty much the same guy, but, you know, he's figured himself out, you know, like he's figured out where he belongs in the world, and he's good with it. It was really interesting in terms of like it's not your standard superhero. It starts off very much like a cookie cutter superhero movie in a way, but then like it sort of goes off into and becomes its own weird little thing. It has probably one of the great you know, Marvel movie moments in there, because it's like, okay, you know, he's breaking into the Avengers facility, he's gonna fight an Avenger.
Because
like, it's a Marvel comic, because whenever you have two heroes in the same thing, they have to fight before they, you know, can work it out and be friends. You know, that little fight between the Falcon and Ant-Man was fantastic, that felt like a Marvel comic book
Was fun, but it's one of those elements where I was like, can we just let it be an Ant-Man movie? I feel like whenever they do that, like, there's a part of my brain that just goes, oh, I was having such a good time and now we have to fit this in. And there's a part of me that really felt that scene was a bit shoehorned in, you know, especially the fight, because I mean, you're so right. Like, it is so the typical superhero fight, because like, Paul Rudd is like, but wait, no, I'm trying to stop something bad from happening. And like, the Falcon just doesn't even listen to it. You know what I mean? It's just like, all right, here we go. We're going to fight. You know what I mean? It's very much like straight out of like the comic books in that way. But I felt like it was something that was kind of shoehorned in. But I did like the way that it kind of unfolded, which is like, they thought they were breaking into a Stark abandoned warehouse, and obviously the public has not been notified that this new Avengers facility is on upstate New York, and he's skydiving out of a plane with a bunch of ants, like riding a flying ant, which was just like totally cool. And
And dude, how awesome were the ants in this movie?
They were really great.
They did a really good job. I mean, you know, you like, again, sort of like textbook, you know, exposition in there. But like, the scene where they introduce the different species of ants, and he has the little moment with them, so that like, you're, you know, again, they give you just enough information for you to know what's going on at all times.
Well, here's the thing: as far as with the ants go, like, what I noticed is that they weren't scary looking. You know what I'm saying?
No, and, not at all.
And, you know, like, you could see a movie like this and the ants would be, like, really terrifying, you know, or like, intimidating or scary. And I guess it's really interesting because obviously the hero has to work with these creatures. So they kind of have to not be cutesy, but can't be, like, horrifying. But, mm-hmm. and I'm totally about to go on a tangent. Like,
all right.
I don't understand why this movie had to be PG-13. You know what I'm saying? Mm. Because, you know, my daughter happened to see the commercial when we were watching an episode of Star Wars, the new Star Wars show. And she was like, oh, I want to see that. And at the time, the rating hadn't come out. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, oh, maybe this will be the first PG superhero movie. You know, it'll be like a fun adventure. And, you know,
yeah.
I take her. And then the rating comes out, and it's PG-13. And I'm all ticked off. But I go to see this movie, and I'm like, why is this PG-13? I mean, the only reason I could think of is because of the curse words. You know what I mean? There's
yeah,
some.
But nobody dropped an F-bomb.
Nobody drops an
F-bomb. That's what makes a
PG-13. Yeah, but so what is it? Because apparently, like, we came out of the movie and except for the curse words and stuff, you know, which obviously my daughter is 8. She probably has heard. I know that she's heard a lot of that stuff at school, but not like, you know, to an extent. But like, except for that stuff, this could have easily been PG. And it's like, why? What are you guys doing? Like, especially if you took the curse words out, because I felt like they weren't necessary. I felt like every scene that had a curse word in it would have been just as effective without one. And now I sound like a prima donna, like ultra religious. You know what I'm saying? But I got nothing against curse words. I use them all the time. But my point is like, my wife basically was like, yeah, I think our daughter could go see this. And I was like, yeah, she probably could, but I would be really uncomfortable sitting next to her when the guy's like, you're a pussy, or, you know, or the guy, or he says, somebody says, you know, shit, or something like that. You know, there's a part of me that would just be sitting in that theater like, let them be innocent for a while, you know? So, but
I have a fantastic story to tell you off.
Okay.
Off the record as soon as we finish this, by the way.
The listeners are going to be disappointed.
The listeners will be disappointed. But if they want to hear it, then they can contact me personally.
But that's the thing is what I don't really understand is why this had to be PG-13. And at this point, I was talking with somebody, a friend, and they were saying, like, they think that a lot of these guys push for PG-13 so that it won't be like, oh, that's just PG. That's,
right.
You know, which to me is like, and when you look up the PG-13 rating for this, it says like extreme violence or something, or like cartoon violence. And I was like, really? Because
maybe kids got really upset when Anthony bought the phone. I did. I mean, that's like how
you
good
knew
the movie
was. Coming.
Come knew on. It was coming, but I still felt bad when, you know, when a digitally created ant bought the farm, man.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing with this movie. It definitely telegraphs its stuff. You know, like when Hank Pym, there's a bit of a scene where Scott Lang wants to modify the shrinking technology in the belt.
Right, right.
And Hank Pym is like, don't do that. Don't mess with the belt, because if you do, you could go subatomic, dun dun dun, you know. And it's very much like, if you go subatomic,
as we learned the Wasp did.
Yes, exactly, because she was trying to stop a nuclear missile, which interestingly enough is the exact way that kind of Bucky dies
in
the Captain America comics. And I'm like, why couldn't Bucky die that way in the first Captain America movie? Like, you know what I mean, hanging on to the side of a rocket. So
I don't know, but it's dude, rockets are tough on sidekicks.
I know, right? Yeah. But essentially, that's one of the big warnings that Scott Lang gets.
And, yeah.
You know,
so you know he's going to do it.
Exactly. You know exactly he's going to do it. But I will say that when it happened, when he did go subatomic at the end, that was pretty cool. Like,
yeah.
I loved like how they went like close, like it was kind of like their 2001 homage, but not, mm-hmm. you know what I mean?
Like, well, yeah. And, you know, since they're definitely using, you know, setting up the basically the magical realm coming up in the next realm. This is a great little tie-in. You know, you've obviously got essentially by opening up to what they call this like quantum realm, the subatomic thing. Essentially, what they're doing is opening it up to magic, because it's like, okay, down here on this realm, anything can happen, you know? And it's, dude, there's going to be some weird stuff coming up.
Yeah,
and I'm excited about that.
I think that, see, that's the thing is, I think that you are very correct. And it's the thing that I was thinking, like, I think that Civil War, like, as much as I hated the comic book series and it made me stop collecting regular comics, like pamphlet books, I think what they're going to do with the Civil War movie is probably going to be just as shocking as sort of... We're going to be shocked with that, I think, just as much as we were with the Winter Soldier. Because I know, like, when I went in to see the Winter Soldier, I was like... I wasn't expecting like all that much. I mean, I did like the first Captain America movie. You know, it wasn't the greatest thing ever. The first half is better than the second half, but the Winter Soldier was like perfect from beginning to end, and I was just not expecting it to be like one of my favorite, you know, movies of the year, if not like one of my favorite superhero movies of all time, you know. So I think that Civil War is probably going to take the format that we've become so used to, and I think it's just going to crack everything in half. I really get the feeling that they want to do something crazy with the next movie, and probably like with the Infinity Gauntlets, you know, because there's definitely a part of me that's very much like, all right, can we get past this formula? Like, can we move on here? You know, and it seems like that may be the way to go.
And to me, I think these are like sort of the baby steps here, you know. This is the movie right here is one of those steps toward toward the good high weirdness that's coming our way.
Well, here's a question for you, and you probably don't have an answer for it.
I've got an answer for it. I don't know if it's any good.
Why Ant-Man? Like, that's the thing that I keep scratching my head about. Like, honestly, like 2 weeks ago, I was sitting there thinking, you know, and I posted it on Twitter. I was like, in 2 weeks, an Ant-Man movie's coming out. Like, just sit with that.
You know, think
about it. Ant-Man. Like, who gives a crap about Ant-Man? Like, nobody does. Nobody does. Like,
Somebody gives a crap about Ant-Man.
There's no way that anyone gives a crap about Ant-Man as much as they give a crap about Captain America or
Iron Man. Is, and I think that was Edgar Wright. You know?
You think so?
I think so.
Interesting. Well,
and I think a lot of the reason why we have... I mean... We'll never have his movie, you know.
I wonder if we could get his screenplay, though. That would be great.
But,
his original screenplay.
You know, what we have, I think we have it because of the passion and drive that he had to get it as far as it went. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I guess it is kind of like the Marvel tradition, right? I mean, look at Blade. Like, who gave a crap about Blade, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, that's especially with the... You know, with the B-list characters, it's really cool to have it in the hands of people like who do enjoy, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess...
Enjoy that character.
And it's sort of easier to tweak a character like this who has probably less of an actual, like, big fan base, you know, than, say, somebody like Thor or, you know, Superman or something like that. It's you could probably mess with the origins a whole lot more than, you know... But, I mean, you look at... I'm looking at the Internet Movie Database, and there's, like, 7 writers credited on this screenplay. It's like,
gone through a lot of cooks in this kitchen. You know, that's sort of the way that a modern, you know, property development on something like this goes. I'm impressed, first of all, that a movie ever gets made, but then the fact that like so many people like bring everything to it and that they end up being so good is just that kills me every time, man.
Yeah. Let's talk about Darren Cross, Corey Stoll, the Yellow Jacket. So, you know, at some point in the movie, we basically find out that Hank Pym had a protege, you know, mm-hmm. somebody that he was training to kind of take his place. But as time went on, Hank Pym sees that this guy may not be playing with a full deck, might not be wanting to take the company, his company, you know, in the direction that he thought mm-hmm. he might want him to go. And
he wants to turn it into Tony Stark.
Yeah, exactly.
Is the impression that I got. You know, he wants to take Pym Technologies and turn it into Stark Technologies.
Yeah, basically a weapons factory for the military. And, mm-hmm. you know, Hank Pym's not down with that. And so then a rift forms between them. So not only does, you know, Hank Pym have his daughter, you mm-hmm. know, to contend with her feelings, you know, against him, but now he's got his protege. But, you know, I guess thankfully, Hank Pym ends up being closer to his daughter than, you know, anyone thought. I thought that the Darren Cross character was really interesting, and my wife actually said, you know, like, that guy would have made a really good Lex Luthor. She's like, talk about a missed opportunity. And I was like, I know.
Yeah, yeah.
He was actually, I liked him a lot.
Yeah. He was pretty fantastic. And Corey Stoll is the actor.
Yeah. He's on The Strain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you know, it's cool. You know, he's you know, the bad guy, and you know, he's a very, you know, he's not a super subtle bad guy or anything, but like the actor and, you know, the character himself is supposed to be a very intelligent man. The actor is making very intelligent choices. So you see, you know, like, again, what could have been just sort of throwaway, you do see like an amount of care that's brought to it that makes it better than just, you know, your standard movie bad guy. I mean, you know, you get a genuine sense of hurt and rejection out of him from, you know, the interaction he has with Michael Douglas.
Yeah. It's interesting because what it seems like very much like it was very written like a cardboard cutout villain, and the actor Corey Stoll kind of was able to take certain elements of it and kind of like make it his own and go a little big with it, but not too big. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And made him kind of like an intimidating villain. You know, it's like, don't mess with this guy. I mean, the guy's like basically making, you know, Jell-O out of goats in his lab, you know.
The scene with the little baby lamb got this the PG-13.
You're right.
You know what I mean?
True.
Because like, dude, the way they light it and everything, you're just like, oh, it's the cutest thing in the world, and then he turns it into like a puddle of goo.
Yeah. It's interesting because and then he's like, give me another one. So like, basically the plot is, you know, that Darren Cross, Corey Stoll's character, is developing a suit that can shrink a man, and they're basically going to form an army of these things called Yellow Jackets, right?
Yes.
And Hank Pym is afraid that, you know, that once that technology gets out, you know, all bets are off for mm-hmm. the whole world. And that's why he wants Scott Lang to break into his old, you know, company and steal all the technology.
So, exactly.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, it's kind of like a big caper movie. And, you know, the reason that Scott Lang wants to sort of prove himself at this point is so that he can be with his daughter, because he's gotten a divorce. And he doesn't have custody. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, it all breaks down to it's really interesting, because when you pull it apart and you break it down to its basics, it really is just sort of like a standard heist movie, you know, or a standard, like, I'm a criminal, I'm misunderstood, I'm trying to walk the line, but they won't let me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And maybe that's part of what kind of bugged me about it, because I find, especially after something like Mad Max, like, I find, like, you know, these sort of things kind of like, okay, I've kind of been here before. Mm-hmm. But the thing with Ant-Man that it ends up doing so well, and that ends up redeeming the sort of maybe like tired plot of the mm-hmm. reformed con is the shrinking stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know? And, you know, interestingly, you know, Pym is very concerned with like what would happen if it got in the wrong hands. What we end up finding is like due to the suit's ability to sort of go subatomic, that it could be a lot more dangerous than he thought, because I mean it essentially opens up the universe to this magical portal, which Scott Lang is surprisingly able to deal with really well.
Yeah. There's that moment. I mean, that, like I said earlier, that sequence is like really, really solid, where he's shrinking and he just keeps shrinking and he keeps shrinking, and that could easily kind of be very cheesy, you know, and it doesn't come across that way at all. I thought some of the visuals were like inspired, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And then he just keeps going and going, and then he's able to, you know, pull himself out of it because he has a piece of technology on him that Janet Van Dyne, the original Wasp, did not have.
But more importantly, he's got his daughter's love.
Yeah, that's true too. You know,
it's really cool. I mean, for something that, again, could have been super duper cookie cutter, like the stuff with Rudd and his daughter is just so damn cute.
Yeah.
And so like you just, they do win you over.
Yeah.
You know?
They
and you're just like,
over.
you're rooting for them. And the way it leaves the family at the end of the story too is just fantastic. You know,
yeah.
It's a very, you know, modern family sort of thing, you know, with like it's sort of the new American family, you know, the families that don't necessarily live together, you know, and their step parents and everything. But then it adds, you know, a giant sized ant to that, which I think should be a part of the new American family.
Oh, my God. When I saw that, I was like, oh, my God, get that thing out of the house. Yeah. I mean, that was definitely a moment I was waiting for. I was like, when are we going to see the giant ants? When are the giant ants coming? You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I kind of wanted more of that. Like, I wanted a giant marching to like tear through San Francisco, but
you know what? Again, and another thing to this movie's credit is that it really did leave me wanting more, because I was like, yeah, I would watch that. I would watch another heist movie like that.
Yeah.
I would watch another movie with Michael Douglas any day of the week.
Yeah. So what did you think about the final post like credit sequence?
There were two of them, weren't there?
Yeah, there were two of them.
There was the final one.
The one that reveals the Wasp, which is awesome.
Yeah,
the one
that reveals the Wasp costume is fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, it sets us up for, you know, some
like, I want to see her do some stuff. Yeah,
me too, dude. And I'd love, how cool would it be to see, like, the Ant-Man and Wasp, like, together on screen?
Yeah, I know. It would be
just
exciting.
That little moment that they had, like, sort of in that flashback scene was, like, enough to, like, make me go, wow, that would be fun to watch.
Yeah. Well, that's the TV show that I want to watch. I want to watch that show. You know?
But you're talking about the final thing, which is basically the Falcon and Captain America have the Winter Soldier, like, in their sights. You know, he's there, he's got his mechanical arm in some sort of a weird vice thing, and then it sets up apparently something that they can't contact Iron Man because of something or other.
Yeah.
And then the Falcon says, oh, you know, I know a guy, which I guess, you know, would be Ant-Man.
Yeah. The thing is like, I know this is the setup for like getting Ant-Man into Civil War or the Avengers and stuff, but there was a part of me is like, maybe I was tired at the end or something, but I was like, I don't understand what just happened. And I kind of had to look it up. Like, I was like, because I couldn't identify the Winter Soldier right away. Like, I was like, who is that guy? Like, you know, is it like some criminal or something? And then I was like, oh, okay. Because it seems like it's I don't know. I felt like it was kind of the worst one of all of the ones that they've done, except for maybe like at the end of Thor, the second Thor movie, because I was like, I don't know what's happening here. It felt like they were in the middle of another movie. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just like, that's not. I don't understand what they're doing. You know, so, but I mean. I guess it sets it up for Civil War, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I don't know that we necessarily needed to be set up for Civil War at the end of that, but, you know.
Yeah, no.
It's fine. It was, I just enjoyed the movie sort of on its own merits, and I came out of it really happy.
So in the pantheon of Marvel films, where do you kind of put it? Towards the top, towards the middle?
What would we say in the middle would be a middle Marvel movie?
I think Age of Ultron is like a middle Marvel
okay, movie. Yeah, I'd actually put this like above that.
I think I would kind of put them tied, you know what I mean? No, yeah. You know what? Let me see. Right now it's like, for me it's like Winter Soldier is number one, maybe Iron Man number two, Avengers number three. Maybe this one would be four. Like, yeah. I don't know. Like,
I mean, it's got its own, you know, Rocky charm. And,
yeah, yeah.
I just thought it was like a nice, just a fun movie. I would say it's definitely better than Middle of the Road.
Definitely. I would say, yeah, I mean, I liked it, I think, better than the first Thor. You know, I did like the second Thor. I know a lot of people have a lot of bad feelings towards Thor 2, but I'm not one of them, except for the humor stuff. You know, I liked Thor 2. I liked Iron Man 3, which it seems like now has developed a reputation that people don't like it. I don't know why. I still like it. But this is definitely, I would say in the middle, maybe inching towards the top. Yeah. And definitely worth seeing in the theater. I've heard from somebody that it actually is worth seeing in 3D. But I will never find out.
I wouldn't know. It gives me headaches.
Just can't stand 3D. All right, man. Well, this has been the Ant-Man episode of Part-Time Fanboy. I am Christian Horn, and I'm here with Paul Edwards. And I'm actually going on vacation for a little while. So there's
So am I.
I know. So there's not going to be a new podcast up for a couple of weeks. But I think... what people may have to look forward to is we're going to do a book club, and we're going to do Preacher, Gone to Texas, the first Preacher trade.
I reread it yesterday.
Oh, did you already get to it? I'm waiting to read it on my vacation.
All right. Well, then we got some fun stuff to talk about.
Yeah. So if you're out there, hunt down the first, it's like 6 or 7 issues of Preacher, and or the trade paperback, you know, Gone to Texas. And, you know, hopefully you will join us on the next episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye-bye.